Good evening, November 5th, 2009, James McKinney, going right into my science hour, and welcome all new listeners. Every week I know there are more and more people find this show, and as one person said, it becomes addicting. That's interesting. That 1 hour per week, you get a shot of information that you will find nowhere else. And so with some reality attached to it, actually. That's pretty hard to find these days. So, at any rate, on to the first topics. And first of all, tonight's main science topic, kind of interestingly enough, I remember last week I talked about fascism and the development of fascism as a political type of entity, but the necessity of fascist regimes to depend on engineering and science of the day, whether it was in the Roman legions, whether it was in the Italy in World War II, or in pre-World War II Germany, or any of the places, or in the United States today, where fascism is a growing, not only growing, it's basically here, well supported and present, with a very, very uneducated populace. And that's one of the key issues, too, is a very uneducated populace, people that are very needy. So that leads into an interesting topic for tonight's show. And here's the title. Listen all the way to the end of the title. National Health Care. Now, the papers are filled with this topic. The it's in people's minds. People have opinions about it. Some people think it's going to benefit them, and so they really are supportive of it because they're in a pinch where they don't have health care, or they pay a huge amount of money to have health care. And they're worried about being dropped because of no coverage, because of pre-existing conditions, etc. But here's the second half of the title. Do the math. Now, of course, there is going to be some sort of national health care imposed on this country very shortly. And it's going to take on certain initial phases, but don't worry about that, because that's the shoe in the door. That's the one to make you think this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and everybody is going to benefit, and it's not going to cost anybody anything. It's going to be good. Okay, enough said. But what's the realities? In other words, do the math. And so the part I'm going to cover tonight is the part that you won't find anyplace else, that you won't hear anyplace else. And the reason this is coming up, it's actually a follow-up to my show last week on fascism. And one might wonder what this has to do with space science or weather. Well, the hurricane season is over. There weren't any. There are no sunspots, so there's nothing to talk about there. We do have a meteor stream coming in, and we just had a full moon. So I'm not going to do an hour show on space science today because... And NASA's not doing anything. So, by the way, they had a rocket shoot off, and I watched that, the Ares 10 or whatever it was. And little did I know, I never understood this about this rocket. I hadn't paid that much attention to it. It's just a big Roman candle. It's just a solid rocket booster with a big cone facade on the front. And but I got a kick out of it, and they called it a screaming success. But when that baby went up, it started listing, and of course I'm very familiar with rocket failures and what they look like. And so when that thing took off, it went straight up for about 20 feet, and then you could see the engines were pulsating. They weren't firing, it's just a big solid rocket booster, as I said. And so, it was, faltering, and the rocket itself started to list to the side. And that's when you see a rocket go, off the launch pad. Usually they lift up about 50 or 100 feet, and they kind of flip over sideways, and the thing breaks, and it comes crashing to the ground and blows up, of course. Big explosion, because the surface is broken of the rocket, and you have the flame going, and of course all that fuel is all over, so a nice quick fire, big fire. But at any rate, that didn't happen. They were able to salvage it, and it went off at an angle, not a big angle, but look at that video closely, and you'll see what I'm talking about, that it was not the screaming success that NASA pretended. Of course, they were that very day under scrutiny for funding. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that. I just wanted to elucidate that the fact that that rocket launch was not the screaming success that they were trying to make it out to be. But needless to say, the rocket blew off, and I never heard the last part of it. They never did talk about the end game of that rocket launch. So I suspect there were some failures up there. They had three huge parachutes that had to open. And at any rate, not going to dwell on that. But bottom line is that it looked impressive. It was the biggest rocket, 325 feet tall or something like that. But certainly not something to write home about. Not something that NASA can rely on for their future space program. It was just an empty shell of a rocket that didn't even make it into space. So in that respect, the Chinese have better rockets than we do. At any rate, back to tonight's... First, I'll quick hit on these initial topics. The end of the hurricane season occurred November 1st, a couple days ago, and nothing. I talked about that last week. Nothing at all. We did not have any hurricanes to speak of. We had one that kind of went up into Nova Scotia, but that was it. It really didn't hit land anywhere through the Caribbean or... So, anyway, end of that. Sunspots, there are none. They're still trying to make a big deal about this sunspot 1029 that's now around on the other side of the sun and still going, but that's it. And then we had the harvest full moon this past week. Very beautiful. I happened to be in an area where it was very clear, and very beautiful full moon just a couple days ago. And starting tonight, November 5th, the Taurid meteor stream. And this is the remnant of a comet, Encke, one of the Encke comets. And, of course, meteor streams are the remnant, so to speak, of comet orbits. The meteors follow the orbit that the original comet had. And, of course, let me go through the two theories. The incorrect Dirty Snowball Comet model theory says that the meteors fall out or drop out of the comet, so to speak, and therefore follow the same orbit. My plasma discharge comet model shows that the meteor streams are actually due to chunks of rock that are floating around in space being attracted into the orbital path, pulled into that path by a passing comet, which harbors a non-uniform electric field. And that's why if you are lucky enough to pick up a meteor, the meteorite that falls to the Earth's surface, and you examine it, it has metals in it. And you will not find meteors that do not have metals. There's some metal in each one. And what happens is that metal, it's called the induced electric dipole force, and it's caused by the comet, the charged comet nucleus. And so, at any rate, be that as it may, the interesting thing about the Taurid meteor stream, which will last from about November 5th tonight, starting at midnight, so go out and look around at midnight, if you know where the constellation Taurus is, then watch in that direction, and that's the direction you will see the meteors coming from. And it will last until next week, a full week, until the 12th of November. So any night this coming week, till next Thursday night, go out around midnight, and you will see the meteor stream from the constellation Taurus. But what's unique about the Taurid meteor stream, there's not many. The count is just a few per hour, so you have to sit there and stare a lot to see them. But one thing is they move relatively slowly, and they're big. So when you do see one, it's going to be a real light show. So at any rate, kind of fun thing for the family to do this coming week, if you can keep everybody awake and dress warm, because, of course, cool night air, you're going to be standing out there, I would say overdress, because in the fall our bodies haven't ramped up the temperature, the heat-producing capability that we normally would have. And so dress warm, go out and look up into the region where the constellation Taurus is, and if nothing else, if you don't know where that is, just look in the sky and you'll see them zipping across the sky down to the horizon. And just a quick follow-up on last week's show. I talked about fascism. And fascism, a lot of times, if you look in fact, I always pull up Wikipedia to see what kind of disinformation they have on a certain topic, especially hot political topics like fascism. And then there they say, oh, it started in pre-World War II Italy. And that's where the term that we use today started, but fascism is ages old. This is a political technique that is used to basically control a population, a country, or a political entity. And historically, governments came out of the military, out of a centralized government, a centralized need, typically to defend an area. So people typically would not be organized or get together, but all of a sudden some group of foreigners come in and attack, and they have to organize. And so there you have a centralized government that forms, and then the unification of boundaries, or the setting of boundaries and the protection of those boundaries, because it's all about resource control. We need enough food and wood and whatever is the resources are on that property to exist. So then the elite tend to move into positions of power. The average guy in the street is not interested in being a politician. He's got a job. Basically, anybody that's got a real job isn't going to be a politician in general. That's not always 100% true, but usually the politicians, and this is throughout history, this is not just today, are the guys that don't have a real job. Because if you had a real good-paying job and things were going great, you wouldn't go off and become a politician. So the politicians tend to be the guys that want to mooch off the system and have a free ride. And, of course, once they get there, the money starts rolling in, because the government is the source of money. And so, at any rate, that fascism builds on that, and of course we are very much there in the United States. So not going to dwell on that, but I wanted to point out that fascism is very old. It goes back to the roots of history, the dawn of civilization, where small power groups become entrenched and basically build their positions on the work and labors of the rest of the population. And we are very much there in this country called the United States. And I know this is a worldwide program and people are listening all over, but what happens in the United States affects people everywhere. So the irresponsibility of people in this country branches out into other countries and very much affects the rest of the world. Okay, so enough of that. How to do the math on healthcare, on national healthcare. And let me preface this by saying, here's how this all started. I was at a group gathering this past week, and primarily they were baby boomers. The baby boomers, the first wave of baby boomers that are retiring, just about to retire, and some still working part-time. But the idea of healthcare came up because it's just on people's minds. And it started out by one person saying, well, we really need healthcare. We need this healthcare because
I have to pay this $1,000 a month for my health care, and I can't keep doing that. Other person said, yeah, well, my health care has doubled since I retired. And so here was a person that had been retired for maybe 2 years, and his health care costs had doubled. There was a woman who chimed in and said that she had been a nurse or in the nursing industry and quit because of the pressure being put on these people to produce, to see more patients, to hurry up and give that shot. And you don't stand there and talk to the patient. You give the shot and get out of there and you go to the next person or whatever the medical procedure was that the nurse was doing. And she said that the pressure became, you know, it was because the hospitals are privatized and they become profit centers. So standing and talking to a patient is not a luxury item anymore. It's not something that they want to afford because then they would have to hire more nurses who would be standing around talking to patients. And that's technically not what they're there for. But traditionally, that is what they have been doing in the past. And a lot of patients are in there. Sometimes the nurse is their only point of contact with the rest of the human race because, you know, but anyway, those are just some of the comments that came in. And so it started to become obvious in listening to people's comments that they don't understand that the real issue is when the federal government becomes involved in health care, it's going to be developed, so to speak, the policies are going to be developed by the pharmaceutical companies. There is nobody in Washington representing the average guy, especially the average guy, and they want to fund this by putting a surcharge on existing insurance. In other words, if you already have insurance, they want to put a surcharge on you to pay for the insurance for the people that don't have insurance. So the people who are already struggling and think that they're going to get some benefit out of this are mistaken. It's actually going to cost them more. And then when we run the numbers here, you're going to see that the health care for everybody is going to absolutely go out of existence, literally. So just one second. Just taking a sip of water there. Okay, so I'm going to go through. I have a whole list of factors here. And now, mind you, these factors are never discussed on any of the newspaper articles. What you see there is praising the senators for their, you know, tremendous knowledge and all they're going to do for you. But the real issues are never covered in the mainstream media. So that's why I'm going into this. And I want to do it from a perspective of numbers. So let me start in with the following. Okay. First of all, poor people and foreigners who have never had insurance before are going to be the main target of this issue. And why foreigners? Because now foreigners can vote in the United States. It's going to be a large population that will swing national elections. There are already a lot of media hype that the Spanish cultures are basically populating the United States to the point where they control a lot of influence, let's put it that way. So the politicians are going, we need their vote, we need their those ballots in the box for us. So they're going to give them something for free, but of course nothing is really for free. So at any rate, but this is the crux of the issue right here. The healthcare systems in the United States are already cutting back. There have been large layoffs in the health industry. Incomes are down because people simply don't have money to go to the doctor anymore. We're in a third world status. This is exactly what it's like in a third world country. You have people who are sick. They stay in bed. They can't afford even simple medications. So they simply stay in bed sick until somehow they get better. Somebody tries to take care of them, etc. But that's a third world country. That's where we are today. So people are sacrificing going to the doctor simply because they can't afford it. And I know tons of people who work. If you look at people who are waiters or waitresses, all kinds of groups of people who simply have no health care, have not had health care for years in this country. Okay, so there's a pent-up demand there, a pent-up demand for health care. And the needs of these people. Now, if all of a sudden you come in with a health care plan and say, everybody now can get health care and go to the doctor. But the poor person over there, who really makes up the majority of people, this is the other factor, that the majority of people in who actually have health care are vastly in the minority in the United States. So you have a small population that does have health insurance, and a very large population that does not have health insurance. Okay, do the math. When you all of a sudden open up an already stressed medical industry with to a population 10 times the size of the population that is already going and receiving these benefits and going to doctors, etc., all of a sudden you're going to be overwhelming the medical system and with people who are not contributing anything monetarily. Okay, these are just numbers. I'm not saying it's good or bad or indifferent, but people who think, well, oh, good, national health care. Grandma can now get her operation. Wrong. Grandma is not going to get her operation, nor is grandma going to get anything else. The only people that are going to get anything out of this are the pharmaceutical companies and the large industries that make money off of medicine. They will get money infused into them directly from the government. So you have to understand when the policies are being written in Washington today, that's what's being dealt with. Not that grandma's going to get her operation. And so when Obama goes up and tells you that we have to do this and this is going to be good for the country and everybody needs health care, that's not what the end result is going to be. And as I said, as with anything that the government does, the first step is to get your foot into the door. And so that's what the first stage of health care is going to be. Secondly, the other thing that happens, and this I've seen over and over again, when people all of a sudden get health care, and you see this with especially with people that say marry somebody from a foreign country, they come here and they have never had health care, they start to use the health care system and they go there every day. They are there every day. And then they have a medical problem, and the doctor's treating them for this, and when they get done with that one, that's something else. And they don't understand. It's kind of like assumed in the United States, if you have had health care, that you go to the doctor when you need something. And you don't go there every day when the kids have a sniffle. And this is the other thing I've seen, that say they have three kids. Well, today, this little kid has something, and that's to the doctor. Okay, tomorrow this kid is something, and they take them to the doctor. They are to the doctor three or four times per week. These situations are stressing the insurance pools of, say, corporations that have you know, large body of employees who are insured under an insurance program. That is driving up the cost, and there's no check on that, checks or balances that are put in place to say, is this person overusing the medical system? And so that's the other thing. When you have poor people that have not had medical, and people who come from other countries who have never had a medical like in the United States, they will come in and use extravagant amounts of the medical system, not thinking, not understanding that this medical system is not just for them, it's for everybody. So the end result will be, number one, the guy that used to be able to get to the doctor will not be able to get to the doctor anymore. It's becoming commonplace for appointments with doctors or doctor's assistants to be out sometimes a week, 2, 3 to 4 weeks, or even sometimes months, when you can get in to see a doctor or especially a specialist. The other thing that happens is that once you do get to see the doctor, they come in, they do something very quickly, and then they leave. And this was one of the complaints that people were starting to bring up at this little impromptu meeting that I was at the other day, saying that when they went to the doctor, they couldn't get any attention from the doctor. The doctor came in, filled out a couple forms, said something, and walked out of the room, because that doctor probably had 30 appointments to make that day. And, of course, he's got a 8-hour time schedule he wants to do that in and get out of there. So he doesn't have time to sit there and discuss everybody's personal life. This person was saying that he did not have time to ask the important questions he wanted. That's going to become more commonplace. And so you see other countries, and this is something I'll talk about in a little while, some of the medical programs that exist in other countries. Canada is, as I understand it, starting to break down. There are a lot of people going there, foreigners. There are a lot of people from the U.S. going to Canada, getting away from the overbearing government that we have here. And the end result is that people will simply no longer have medical coverage at all. So that's when you do the math, when you do the math correctly, the government thinks it's going to put a big chunk of money into health care, and it's going to cost so much, and that all of a sudden this money was some way, in some form, magically going to bring health care. Another issue that has happened, and I think a lot of people have forgotten about this, is that about 10 years ago, there was a move to privatize clinics and hospitals. Hospitals and clinics were purchased by profit center organizations. So you had maybe one hospital or a couple hospitals that were profitable. They began to purchase clinics and hospitals and make groups of hospitals, sometimes small groups, few, you know, 5 or 10 in a region. And of course, it became economically viable to do things like medical lab testing in a single location. So if the hospitals were all in the same area, it was cheaper to have, say, one centralized medical center do the processing of the laboratory blood samples, whatever else was going on. And so that would be centralized in a hospital. And so they could lay off staff, become more efficient, and also make profit. So the privatization of clinics and hospitals is something that I believe everybody forgets about in this discussion of national health care. We have medicine for profit in the United States. If you look at the places where there is socialized medicine, and that's what they're trying to talk about here, you see the doctors. It's not unusual for a surgeon or a specialist to make $400,000 to $500,000 a year. You're not going to have that in socialized medicine. The medical staff, the doctors are not going to be making that kind of money. So how do you tell a doctor or a specialist or somebody who's currently making that kind of money that they're not going to make that? In fact, they're probably going to make a third of that once socialized medicine goes into place, or government-sponsored health care, as they're trying to call it. But look at a location like Cuba. Cuba went through some serious growing pains when it first was boycotted by the United States 50 years ago. Cuba had some serious problems to go through, but they slowly built up, and now in Cuba, everybody has dental, vision, and medical care, down to the poorest person to the oldest person in the country, and it has stabilized. Now, that's a huge word, stabilized. They didn't get there overnight, and they would not be able to take a big new influx of people into Cuba all of a sudden into their medical system. It would break it. But for the country as a whole, Cuba probably has the best medical, dental, and vision care of probably any country in the world. The South American, the Latin American countries send their young people, the doctors, the people who want to be doctors, dentists, etc., go to Cuba to the best schools. And these schools have then started other schools, like in the Dominican Republic, which then service a lot of the people, students who come to learn. And this all started in Cuba, mind you. So the Latin America, and so I thought it was interesting when this group of people when they were sitting around and everybody's talking about their particular problem regarding health care, I said, you have to understand, Cuba has a very good medical system in place. And everybody goes, oh, Cuba, oh, they're just that's just a banana republic down there. People don't understand that Cuba has an excellent medical system for all the people. And it's because it's a socialist system, but it was developed over a very long period of time, and now everybody there has health care, dental care, and vision care. The United States is about to enter into a system where most of the money being put in by the government will be siphoned off to big business, just like the bailouts. One would ask for all the money that went into the bailouts of big corporations. Nobody knows where that money is now. It's gone. It was simply sucked up by big corporations, and it's gone, and nobody has any accountability of where it went. Do you think that the medical money, the money that's going into the medical nationalization of medicine in the United States, do you think it's going to be any different? The policies that are being developed right now are being developed in Washington behind closed doors. In fact, there's a joke about it. It's a $2.2 million per plate is what they estimate it costs to sit in on those meetings. And per plate, that means like there's a luncheon, so to speak. You know, like when they have a political fundraiser, they say $1,000 a plate meal, and they bring in 200 people to raise $200,000 at a meal, and that's a fundraiser. Well, the fundraiser ticket to sit down at the plate in the meetings that they're dealing with healthcare, they say, is $2.1 million. So you don't have that kind of money. I don't. Clearly, it's closed doors in Washington hammering out what they're calling health care, and it's going to be nothing more than a big scam to get money from the populace into the pockets of the big industries that are in the medical industry, and all in the name of helping grandma get her operation. Grandma's not going to get her operation, believe me. So, they're also working diligently to make alternative health care illegal. What would be the first thing that some people might say? well, I can't afford this. I'm not getting the medical attention I need from the real healthcare industry, so I'm going to try alternatives. So they want to stop that particular avenue of escape for the majority of people who would be thinking in terms of alternative health or effort to squelch alternative medicine. And the way they usually do that is by creating a false flag type situation with the alternative healthcare industry. So that's already going on. Laws to limit the use of, say, herbal treatments and alternative methods for people to treat their maladies. The other thing will be the following. Once they have everybody under the nationalization policy, corporations will say, we have this big chunk of money that we pay to our employees for health care, and we don't want to do that anymore. So why don't we just dump our employees into the national system? We'll let the employees pay for this themselves, and we'll be out of it. We can save all of this money. So that is going to happen. So you can count on that. So the people who actually have legitimate health care today will pay more and be dumped into the national system and then be side by side with the people that never had any health care. And this may be good or bad depending on which side of the coin you're on. Some people may say, well, yeah, they should pay more because they already have insurance. And the people with no insurance want to have insurance and they want to be able to go to the doctor. But the end result is, as I said, do the math. There's going to be such an influx of need into the medical system that it'll simply break down. And furthermore, the money that the government is putting into it will not go to hire more nurses or hire more doctors or train more people. It's going to be a collision of two trains. The needs of the vast group of people with no medical insurance right now colliding with the medical industry that will not be able to hire more people or increase staff or facilities to the rate that the new need part is coming in. This is a collision of monumental proportions. And if anybody thinks that grandma now is going to get her operation, even if she had insurance before, grandma probably is not going to get an operation no matter what. So now there's another factor that's going to come into play. Recently, the H1N1 flu national emergency was announced by Obama, and it's really kind of a joke because they keep trying to promote that there are vast amounts of people sick, and there really are not. This is much in the news. There's a lot of hype. They're talking about people who are dying from H1N1 flu, but every time you see such a case, they have pre-existing conditions like respiratory disease or something that even a bump on the toe would have caused these people to die. So the news is being skewed, but with national medicine in place, you can see that Obama wanted national medicine in place months ago, and it didn't happen because of political infighting between Republicans and Democrats. The national dog and pony show that makes you think that we actually have a democracy here. But here is the point. Once national medicine is in place, the government will be able to mandate that you all have to get a shot, like the H1N1 flu shot, for example. And the reason this is important is because now the government has a leverage over people. People now are saying, well, I don't think I'm going to get this shot. I'm just going to decide what's best for me. But if the government comes in and says, you're not going to be able to have health insurance, your family will be dropped from health insurance if you don't get the shot. You see, what's going to happen is now, and that's just one example, that's just an example of government forcing medical situations on the populace. And it's already been done. I talked a few weeks ago about Puerto Rico when they had the oil fires in San Juan, Puerto Rico. The police and the fire departments came in, rounded up the people in a certain area, put them in a holding area, and the first thing they did was give all of them an H1N1 flu shot. Well, it became obvious that this was an operation, because where on earth, with the shortage of H1N1 flu virus shots that are the shortage that exists today, where all of a sudden, magically, did they come up with this hundreds of thousands of shots in San Juan, Puerto Rico, all of a sudden on a given day when there was an oil fire? So you start to see the kind of trickery that's going on here in the type of, oh, what would you say, programs that are going on to basically turn the public into a rat lab in these certain areas. Now, as I said when I was talking about that, they will be able to track this population like a medical experiment. So this is what nationalized medicine is going to be like. Can you imagine calling the emergency 800 number of the federal government nationalized health program and trying to get an answer? The first thing, well, I won't go into detail, but the ability to contact somebody or get recourse through this system simply will not be there. It'll be just a huge bureaucratic tangle, and it simply will not work. But so you look at the numbers with the privatization of clinics, the ability of clinics and hospitals to work for profit, the already overstressed, understaffed medical staffs, and the increase in the number of people that is going to come in, probably a 5 to 10-fold increase in people who will now be seeking medical attention. The government is in no way preparing for these numbers, and so that is the crux of the problem. The problem is that the population seeking medical attention is going to just simply overburden the system. The end result will be that nobody has health care, and certainly dental and vision are nowhere on the horizon. So in a country where you have healthy people, one of the first things you need is good teeth. You need good dental hygiene, and that's not going to be part of the program. We're living literally in a third world country. A lot of the people simply have fallen through the cracks, and you never see them anymore. The end result for the healthcare system will be, it'll be very expensive for the people who do pay for healthcare, and it will be profit for a few, the good old American way. So the first wave of people to retire, now the reason I say retire is because a lot of the baby boomers still have jobs, but they're at the point of retirement. When they retire, they're going to have to start paying for insurance, and that insurance is going to start eating up more and more of their retirement allotment. So that's going to force a lot of baby boomers to continue working and not retire. And so this will force a job shortage on younger people coming into the workplace. With jobs that are probably fairly well paying, that the baby boomers, the ones that are still working, the new people coming into the workforce will have no place to go because the economy is stagnant. You see that all of these factors are contributing to a country, and what will really end up, will literally really end up, is like in a state of a third world country where people who are sick simply lay in bed without the ability to get medical attention. So with all of the talk that you hear, all of the politicizing on the national medicine system, it's going to be, in this country, an absolute disaster. Let's see if there's any other notes here. The backup log of illness and treatment, I did talk about that. For people who have been waiting for years without medical attention. At any rate, that is basically healthcare by the numbers. And as I said, the federal government is not planning this, the collision of these two trains, these two economic situations, the inability of the medical industry to cope with this large increase in demand, and then also the number of people who will simply, because they've never had insurance, they will start living in the medical system. And I've seen this personally, where somebody for maybe 10-year period has not had any medical, and all of a sudden they just start going to the doctor, and within, just very specific examples, within a couple months have run up $500,000 bill and in the medical field because of all of their, and a lot of this in some of the cases I saw was because of unhealthy living practices. But be that as it may, that doesn't matter. There are a lot of people who are poor who also have very poor hygiene, have very poor health practices, very poor diets, and are, once the medical industry is give a pill, that'll solve all your problems. So these people will truly, many of them start to simply live in the medical system and use it on a near daily basis. Well, okay, that's the end of the discussion on that. But I wanted to make sure people understand that this is not being covered in the mainstream news media. They are... we're headed for a disaster in this country, another disaster, and of course the country can't take this. The young people coming up are going to have to pay for it. It's simply not going to work. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about water filters, and we're starting the season right here before the November, December, and just briefly want you to think about giving something to people. If you're planning on gifts or whatever, give a water filter or give a set of my books from the web page. Just talk about the stainless steel Dalton water filter that comes with four Super Sterisil filters. I just use one myself. When the systems are sent out, they have three plugs that you can plug the holes, so you can run the water filter with just one water filter element. And so therefore you have three spares, and that's great for an average family, actually, to use it in the kitchen. And then you also have it in case of emergency. There are no hoses, no electrical connections, very simple gravity-fed water filter system developed for third world countries. And actually these were developed in the early 1800s for water purification. The ceramic elements improved over time, and now they are a three-part element. There's a ceramic outer shell, which is the pre-filter. Then there's the carbon middle filter, the black carbon middle filter, which takes out chemicals. And then there's an inner ceramic shell filter, a final filter. And this is the best filter you are going to find, $319. And that includes shipping to the 50 states. For Canada, add $21 fixed rate fee for shipping, and to any other country, $41 fixed rate shipping. So what you get is the Dalton. It's about a 2.5-gallon stainless steel tank that sits on the lower collection tank, and with four Dalton Super Sterisil filter elements, and as I said, free shipping to the 50 states. Plus, you get the Kato WRX 911 free radio. It's a small emergency shortwave radio. It has FM, AM, and shortwave. And you can listen to this show on that radio. it has the 5.070 frequency and the 5.895 frequency that the Friday night show is heard on Saturday morning show. For $319, the address, let me give you the mail order address, P.O. Box, first of all, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. Once again, that's JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. That's $319 for the Dalton's stainless steel, lasts more than a lifetime, and then the four filter elements plus the free Kato WRX 911 radio, and the free shipping to the United States, $21 extra for shipping to Canada, and $41 extra for shipping to any place else in the world. And remember that in an emergency, or even not in an emergency, the average person requires 5 gallons of clean, fresh water per day. So the even though the tank on these Daltons is only 2.5 gallons, they'll produce up to about 20 gallons per day. And so that's enough. If you keep adding water to the top, it'll keep filtering, and you can get enough water to survive. And that's what's important. When the water goes out or when the electricity goes out, even people who live on the farm, they think, oh, well, I have a well. Well, if the electricity goes out, you don't get any water out of that well. So you may end up, anybody might end up using surface water. And the first thing that's going to make you sick, in the case of an emergency, the first thing that's going to make you sick is bad water. So, at any rate, that's why I feel that these water filters are very important. I don't talk about them too much on the radio show. I should give an honorable mention every show, but I, for past weeks, I've been busy covering other topics. So, just remember, oh, by the way, my webpage where you can also purchase these, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, short for jmccannyscience.com, but use the short version, you'll get to the same page, www.jmccsci.com. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about the sunspot issue. For the past, probably 3 years now almost, we have had little to no sunspot activity on the sun. And during that time, we've had some tremendous storm systems. This past year, we didn't have any. But the question is, does sunspot activity influence Earth's weather or anything else on Earth? And the real answer is no, not really. There are other factors involved with the sun that contribute to our weather, but the sunspots of themselves do not directly affect our weather. So there are a lot of misconceptions running around. There's some actual clowns running around the internet who have no scientific training at all trying to make those claims. So I just want to make it clear that sunspot activity has really nothing directly to do with Earth weather or Earth changes of any kind. But the corroborative activity on the sun, the solar wind, the solar wind pressure, other dynamic conditions of the solar wind that comes out of the sun, these do in fact affect Earth weather in that we are passing through an electrical condition in the solar system at all times. And the way this works is the sun puts out an excess of positive charge, very slowly building up a capacitor that is like a big battery. All the planets, all the moons, all the asteroids, all the dust particles in space move through this electric field and interact, and the Earth is no different. So when we especially have alignments, for example, with other planets or other comets that are electrical discharges of this solar capacitor, then our electrical conditions around the planet change, And this can cause things to heat up in terms of weather. There are so many false conclusions, false theories floating around, especially with the National Weather Service, you know, for example, stating that El Nino is, they really don't even know what causes it, but obviously the only thing that can cause El Nino is the electrical currents from outer space. They're not heated from below, and it's not due to the winds blowing heat around the top of this ocean surface. And also, the hurricanes in the Atlantic or in the Pacific are not caused by warm water. They're caused by electrical conditions that actually come from outer space. And so that information you can read in my books. I'm not going to go into detail on how all of that works here. But the point is that starting with the sun, the issue that right now the sun does not have sunspots and has not had sunspots for actually years, we're actually breaking records, has relatively little to do with our weather or lack of weather here on Earth. As I said, there are other factors associated with the sun and also relative to suns, the local sunspot conditions. Those somehow interact on the surface of the sun, but really, it is not a direct relate. There's no direct relationship between sunspots and Earth weather. Right now, we're in a relatively tranquil season, no hurricanes for this past hurricane season, but that's because we didn't have any major electrical alignments with other planets. And you can see this occurring. Sometimes it takes three or four members of the solar system in an electrical alignment to really see some noticeable differences in Earth's weather. And this past year, in fact, back in February, people always wanted me to make some kind of prediction for the upcoming year's weather. And I tend not to do that because unless there's something significant, something really major that's really noticeable. And I've done that in the past with great success. But this year, the only thing I could say is that there's nothing happening this year. There are no electrical alignments. You always have a couple, but the Venus inferior conjunction, etc. But they're not major conjunctions where you have three planets or a longer span in the solar system. So really, this year was very predictable to be a dud of a year as far as hurricane activity, etc. The other thing is that it's very difficult to predict because you might have extraneous, unexpected conditions coming into the solar system, such as a comet that was unexpected. And so you can predict the paths of the planets, where they're going to be, the new moons, the new moon passing, those are all very predictable. But a comet or some electrical condition in the solar system is not always very easy to predict. So that's why you always have to say, well, or also solar conditions. The conditions of the sun might change and cause some different interactions with Earth and Earth weather. So all of those things have to be taken with a grain of salt, but very predictable. This year was a dud of a hurricane year. Once again, this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.